Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Much have preferred us to won and move on. We didn't do that. Now, saying that, we have a really exciting game that's in front of us. And the challenge is, by the time you get to the first pitch, to have everything behind you so you can play your best game. Just like we say when we've won a lot in a row, we don't look back. So that's the same idea now. I mean, we're playing a good team, and we respect that. They've showed that. But our challenge is to play the best game we can, and I think we will. We're going to obviously go through the workout. He's been hitting off the machine already, and we're going to have him go out and run just to see where he is running-wise. You know, he was never exactly our biggest base-stealing threat. We want to use common sense, but I think he's going to be okay. I think I know what solace means. I mean, I'm not exactly positive. I mean, I'm close. I don't know that solace is the right word. I think we tried to be prepared for just about every scenario that could be thrown at us. I think we feel real comfortable with how we went about everything, and we wanted Kluber if we got to this game. I've got about four lineups down there just because there's a lot of either-ors.
A lot of adrenaline, emotions are running high for both sides. I mean, boils down to, you know, the loser goes home. So, I mean, you're looking at a pretty small sample size. It's four games. I don't know if you can necessarily consider that a trend or that it's been that, I mean, the home team's won every game so far. You know, I mean, I guess that's why you try to get home field advantage, you know, throughout the course of the year, is to hopefully, if it does come down to having a deciding game, that you're able to play it at home.
Just knowing these guys and the way we've responded all year, you know, this is a team that, you know, I feel like every time, you know, whether it's in a game or coming up during the season, we had, you know, tough time or backs against the walls. I feel like we responded really well. I didn't see why we couldn't go home and play well and end up back here. I've just always been confident in my ability to get people out, no matter what the stuff was. Being able to come out and have a good season, you know, makes me confident. I never really thought about that, you know, pitching in big games or anything like that. I just felt like if I got to the spot, then I could show up.
Momentum a lot of times depends on your starting pitching. You know, CeCe, I thought, threw a pretty good game here the last time, and CeCe's used to these big moments, so, I mean, we feel good about him on the mound. But our guys are confident, and we know we're facing a good team, and we know we're facing a tough pitcher. But, I mean, you go through that during the course of the season, a lot of games, and, you know, we've had three must wins, and we've been able to come out on top on all three of them, and hopefully the fourth one we can do it too.
Dwayne Wade has to figure it out because he's so used to being the first or second option. He's coming into a team to where he's probably the third, fourth, or even maybe fifth option. So he has to get accustomed with playing with LeBron again, playing with Kevin Love, and he has to pick his spots. They have to find ways to get him involved. Dwayne Wade is a smart player. He'll eventually figure it out. Once he figures out his role, he'll pick his spots.
I would ask every player in the NFL today, if you can hear me, stand up. Stand up. And then once everybody stands, tell the commissioner, now we're standing, can you go stand for us? Because the initial message is gone. So now it's a lose-lose situation. Everybody's losing. The NFL is losing sponsorships because of grandstanding on either side. So it's lose-lose now. So if you're an NFL player, it's really simple. Stand up. Let's take the politics out of our game. Take the politics away from the NFL. Let the fans get back to football. And then once that happens, take our message, take it to the commissioner, and the commissioner, you talk to your buddies, talk to the 32 owners, and take our message to the President of the United States. Because if he wants to grandstand, if he wants to call us out on Twitter every morning at 3 a.m., 6:30 a.m., you're listening. Are you going to listen then? That would be my message. Are you going to listen then when we do what you ask? You want us to stand? Great, we'll stand. Now, can you listen?
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I'll listen the minute you got something to say. Welcome to the extravaganza right here at ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding Wednesday. Man, another packed full show, a packed montage, kind of laying out some of the biggest sports stories of the day. Outstanding job by our producer extraordinaire, Jim Cushlin. How about game five tonight? Matter of fact, I need to get myself fired up for game five tonight. So you know what I'm going to do in order to try to get some positive mojo in what is otherwise a very, very potentially negative situation for game five, American League Division Series, Central Division champion Indians, wild card representative Yankees. I'm going old school, not back to earlier this year, old school, back to the 80s when the Indians absolutely sucked. And this was one of the great Indians jingles of all time to try to get people to buy tickets to go and watch that Woe Begone franchise. So cheesy. So cheesy. But we're playing the Yankees. We got to pull out all the stops.
It starts from the very first inning. Indian fever. Each game is a brand new beginning. It's the hits, the homers, the double plays. It's how you feel when we win. So catch Indian fever.
I gotta tell you,
was that the one
honestly,
from the year they lost
truly,
100 games?
What's that?
Was that like their theme from the year they lost 100 games?
I don't know. It was in that era, though. I know it was in that era. But you know, Kush, we're gonna talk to Matt Lodi about this, covering the Indians out there in Cleveland at about 3:35, and I got a lot of other things to do before then. But I just have the straight. I should have no business having this sensation. I should have no reason whatsoever to think that the Indians are the underdogs and that they're going to lose. They have Corey Kluber, who is the likely Cy Young winner. The Yankees have C.C. Sabathia, who is not. They have the best lineup in baseball. Batting average, run producing, the Yankees, not. They have the best bullpen in baseball. The Yankees, okay, maybe an equal bullpen. There is no reason the Indians have home field advantage. The Yankees do not. There is no the Indians won 102 games. The Yankees did not. There is no reason the Indians had a 22-game winning streak, the best in the history of the American League. The Yankees did not. There is no reason whatsoever that I should have a feeling of trepidation and fear that the Yankees are going to come back from down 2-0 and beat the Indians in their yard against Corey Kluber with all of those circumstances. None whatsoever. Yet I sit here with said trepidation. I sit here talking to a bunch of Indians fans and probably more Tigers fans, sitting here as a guy who grew up being disappointed by my teams, thinking and feeling like the 3-1 lead that they had in the World Series a year ago, that they lost in Game 7 in their own yard, is about to be upped or one-upped or followed up, I guess, by a 2-0 series and a best-of-five lead, 2-0 lead, I should say, in a best-of-five series that is going to be in your home ballpark in Game 5, and it's going to be duplicated. I can't shake the feeling. Is it just the constant negativity from a lifetime of disappointments from my favorite baseball team? I don't know what it is, but I just have this strange feeling that even though all of the measurables favor the Indians, all of the not immeasurable, what's the word I'm looking for, Jim? All of the
intangibles.
The intangibles is what I'm looking for. All of the intangibles favor them. And yet I fear the worst is in store for my baseball team tonight. My God, I cannot wait for 7 o'clock to get here. So, or I'm sorry, this is 8 o'clock start, isn't it?
Indeed. 7:30 coverage time here on the ticket for that one.
That's another hour of pain and misery and waiting and anticipating the worst. Am I right, Kush? I don't know how you feel about it, but I just have all of this negativity built up inside of me, and I'm ashamed of it. It hurts my feelings. It hurts my ego. As a fan, I don't like to be such a negative person, a naysayer, But my God, I just say they got to get this thing going and get it underway, because I'm just sitting here thinking the worst of the worst.
No, and I've been kind of there with you. I've honestly been in that place since the second inning two nights ago when they went down 4-0 because suddenly they couldn't field the ball worth a lick.
Oh my God.
And honestly,
Bad News Bears style.
Yeah, and the trepidation for me is this is the same feeling I was having last year on Wednesday, November, the entire day of Wednesday, November 2nd. When we were going into Game 7.
Right.
And we even talked on the show. They still have Kluber at home, but I couldn't shake that feeling the entire day that
because
day.
Because the momentum was gone. The momentum you had was gone. The other team, last time it was the Cubs, had won two in a row to stave off elimination. They had everything going their way. And now the Yankees have won two in a row to stave off elimination, and they've got all of the momentum. You saw their dugout last game.
Oh, yeah.
Two nights ago. You saw how they, you know, a Severino fist pumping and jawing and talking trash after every strikeout or after every big out. Guys hitting doubles and on the bases doing karaoke dances and all kinds of other crap. I mean, honestly, they are just feeling footloose and fancy free because they staved off elimination. And the team that's gripping the bat handle until sawdust collects at their feet, squeezing it too tight, that would be the Indians.
Yeah.
They're the ones feeling the pressure right now.
And they should. I mean, it's gotten to this point. You know, if it was a back-and-forth kind of series, you know, you win a game, drop a game, then it would be a little different feel on the momentum front, you know, if there is such a thing. And you heard Girardi in that montage saying the old baseball cliche of momentum's only as good as your next starting pitcher. But because it was 2-0 Indians, go to Yankee Stadium, and now it's back 2-2. That means it's in favor of the Yankees.
And when they went to Yankee Stadium, for the record, they had Carlos Carrasco going, who was 11-2 this season on the road.
He's about the only thing from those two games in Yankee Stadium I can't complain about as an Indians fan. He did his job.
No, he did. I know, but I just mean, you know, that was our belief in that it would be closed out right then and there. And then we all know what happened. Tanaka just found the, you know, found his rhythm, and the Indians batters, quite frankly, you know, it's not as much Tanaka, in my opinion, and not as much Severino. The Indians batters are just squeezing it so freaking tight. We talked yesterday about Lindor, one hit in the four-game series thus far. Yes, it was a big one, but one hit. Ramirez, 2-for-17 in the four-game series thus far. I don't have all of them, like I said. Jay Bruce was the offensive star in Game 1, played a huge role with the game-tying blast in the eighth of Game 2, but since then, nothing. Encarnacion has been out. He is supposed to be back for this one, but will he be able to really plant and swing? And if he does line one into the gap, is he going to have the wheels, or is he going to have to hobble on that bad ankle? You know, it's just, I don't know. There's just so many reasons for negativity. I don't want them. I don't believe in them. I don't like them, but I am just besieged by them. I just cannot escape them.
No, and I know exactly what you mean. It's like, you know, I still have the same feeling on this one right now, Bob, that I said yesterday, which is all of this is too eerily similar to me to that 99 division series, which I still consider the more apropos comparison since that was a best of five division series, up 2-0, winning both at home, et cetera, and so on. The only two things that are different between now and 99 is, one, the Indians have Corey Kluber tonight, not Charles Nagy, who totally didn't have it that year. And two, there's not an injured Pedro Martinez about to walk out of that bullpen to throw six no-hit innings like in that game.
Yeah.
That's the only difference. Otherwise, I can't shake that feeling.
If we're looking for plus side. By the way, speaking of Pedro Martinez and Red Sox, how about John Farrell?
Yeah,
John
saw that
Farrell
today.
Gone. You know, they won their division. They, you know, did a tremendous job in you know, most of the season, I should say. They had to deal with some injuries as well. John Farrell takes them to the playoffs. They do get a win, but they don't win the division series. And bang, John Farrell gone. That's not good enough. Not winning a postseason series, at least one postseason series, is not enough to keep your job in Boston these days. That's a tough gig.
Yeah, and I kind of partially understand. I mean, this has been a solid team these last 2 years, those Red Sox. They won the division twice, but at the end of the day, they're 1-6 in the two division series.
Yep.
That's not going to cut it for how much Boston spends, et cetera, and so on with that team.
That's what I was about to say. If you get into the payroll situation, then you are expected to go farther than that. All right, we're going to talk a lot more baseball coming up at 3:35 with Matt Lodi. So speaking of not going farther than that or farther than anywhere, how about your United States men's national soccer team? Holy.
I debated making
cow.
This the wild stat, incidentally, Bob.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But I can tell you this. The soccer community in the United States of America today, they are just up in arms.
Oh, bitch, bitch, bitch.
That's what they're doing.
Quite frankly, they should. They've set soccer back in this nation 20 years as if it couldn't be back any farther than it already is.
I was just about to say, did they?
Because I think so.
I didn't know that soccer was a thing in this country until the World Cup comes around. Because it's not. For all of the, you know, promotion, and it's the fastest growing sport this, and it's got more youth players that, and it's true it does. Which is, Bob, I'll explain in a moment why I'm going to tell you why this doesn't upset me even a little bit. In fact, I kind of feel like, yeah, a little bit. For all of the growth of soccer, and it's the greatest sport of this, and it's really booming in the United States of America, that, and, you know, the women's team won the World Cup a couple of times, didn't they, in the past 20 years or something like
that? Yes, they, I think they won it twice.
Twice?
I believe so.
And this was going to just do tremendous things for soccer in the United States, maybe only for girls' soccer. I don't know, because I don't really pay attention to girls' soccer, and I sure as hell don't pay attention to boys' soccer, so... I don't know, but we were told that the Women's World Cup championships were going to advance soccer exponentially here in the United States of America, where we have so many other games to divert our attentions from things like soccer. This was going to put it back in the spotlight. Well, here we sit. The men's game last night, you just said it yourself, Jim. The men's game in which they lost, who did they lose to yesterday?
I believe it was Panama.
Panama. Are you sure it wasn't Trinidad or Tobago?
No, no, you're right. It was the latter. It was Trinidad and Tobago. Panama is one of the teams that jumped them because of that game.
Okay, there you go. I thought it was Trinidad. And, of course, every time I hear the word Trinidad, I don't think of an elite soccer team. I think of Felix Trinidad, formerly one of the best pound-for-pound boxers in the world.
Nice.
Trinidad, and apparently, are they two nations?
No,
are
that's
they,
one island nation just off the coast of South America.
Is there two of them? Is one of them Trinidad and the other one is Tobago? And they just said, you know what, we'll team up?
I think there must be, there's a smaller island, but it's a little section of one or two islands. I know this much. They're off the coast of South America.
Okay.
And consider Caribbean. Okay.
Well, the folks that, for a while there, I thought it was just two players. It was Trinidad and it was Tobago. It was two guys who beat the U.S. men's team yesterday. To say that this didn't sit well with some guy named Taylor Twellman. I had never heard of until last night's epic rant on the state of the U.S. men's soccer program. To say this didn't sit well with him is an understatement. Listen to this guy going crazy. I don't even know who he is, but listen to him going simply bananas. Where are you, Mr. Bananas? Hold on a second. Let's get him up here. Here we go. Here's Taylor Twellman.
Ladies and gentlemen, the United States have not qualified for the World Cup. They are out. It's not about tonight. It's not about Jurgen Klinsmann. It's not just about Bruce Arena. As a whole, U.S. soccer is not prepared. They have not done a good enough job of getting this group ready to play. By the way, as an ex-player, every single one of those players,
they can take some
nightmares
yep.
for the rest of their lives, because this is an utter embarrassment with the amount of money that is in Major League Soccer and in this sport. You can't get a draw, a tie against Trinidad? We can't beat Trinidad on a field that's too wet and too heavy? What are we doing? What are we doing? This is the discussion that's being had. It's remarkable to me when I go on this stupid thing right here at how ignorant people are when the rest of the world, Belgium played Bosnia on a cow pasture. Yes. Iceland is the same size as Corpus Christi, Texas, or Anaheim, California. They can figure it out. If this failure does not wake up everyone from U.S. soccer to Major League Soccer, from pay to play to broadcasters to everything, then we're all insane. If we don't change it, and I mean we, everyone in U.S. soccer, then what are we doing? What's the point? Because that should have never happened, and it did, and every single person should look themselves in the mirror. And by the way, that's including myself. Yeah, I'm part of U.S. soccer.
We're all involved in this.
I played for the program. It's embarrassing.
Oh, bitch, bitch, bitch.
Did I tell you? Unbelievable. So that dude, whoever he is, and I don't know him because apparently he covers soccer, and I think I heard in that epic
a couple World Cups ago, I think he was on the U.S. team.
Okay, well, that could explain some things. So that guy, whatever his name is, and I forgot it already, laying it out there about how this sets U.S. soccer back 20 years, and after all of the money that's been put into it, and blah, 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 blah. I don't know how it can be set back any further. The Women's World Cup victories didn't advance it anywhere, except for at the youth levels. And this is what I meant when I said I'm unfortunately going to have to take at least a tiny bit of Schadenfreude. I'm going to have to feel a little Schadenfreude here. Schadenfreude, if you don't know, is a German word meaning taking joy or pleasure in the misery of others. I'm going to have to celebrate this in some small way. And this might not make any soccer fans who are listening right now happy, but I'm going to say this. Youth football is losing players at an alarming rate because of ignorant mothers. Okay? Ignorant mothers and maybe sometimes fathers are stealing youth football players away from the sport because they're afraid that little Johnny or Jimmy or Joey is going to crack his little noggin against somebody else, and it's going to make him hoot, and poor widow Jimmy or Johnny isn't going to be able to be all that he can be. He might not go to medical school someday because he got hoot in fifth grade football. And 99% of those kids are going over to soccer. And they're doing so despite the fact that, and most people don't realize this, girls' soccer has a higher rate of concussions than football players do. But because of safety, they're going to play soccer. So as football has dwindled in the United States at the youth level, youth soccer has grown. So if what's that guy's name again? Tyler somebody or another? That dude who just yelled at you for a minute and a half is right that it sets U.S. soccer back for a long time. Maybe it'll take kids off of le pitch and put them back onto the gridiron where they freaking belong. Because I will always go to my grave believing that if God wanted us to play soccer, he would have given us three legs and no hands. God wanted us to play football, period. That's it. The good Lord gave us two hands for one reason and one reason only, to catch footballs. I've told the kids that I've coached that for 20-plus years. That's why you have hands, to catch footballs. Later in life, that might benefit you in some other way because most of you are not going on to the NFL. Most are not even going on to Division I or college football. But while you're young, you are born to catch footballs. You can use them to write if you want in school, I suppose. And I guess you can use your little fingers to tie your shoes. And I suppose to stab your food with your little forks. I suppose there are other ancillary benefits to hands. But by and large, God gave you hands to catch footballs. And guess what you don't need in soccer? You don't need those glorious hands. That's how you know that God frowns on soccer. That's how you know that the good Lord, honestly, the good Lord has a say in all of this. And by only his divine countenance did the Americans lose yesterday, so that we can stop the sinners from taking kids away from football and putting them into the evil satanic world of soccer. That's how we know God had a role in this yesterday. Tyler Lulu, or whatever your name is.
Twillman. Taylor Twillman is his name.
Yeah, that's him. That's how you know God gave us hands for football. If you would have wanted us to play soccer where all you use your feet, you'd have three of them. So understand that. I am not going to take literal pleasure in other people's sadness, but the fact that the United States will not be represented in ye World Cup is something to me that, well, let's just say there are benefits to it. And it benefits the greatest game God ever invented, and that is the sport of football. Jimmy in Toledo. I'm going to get you on here before I start talking baseball with Lodi. Jimmy, go ahead.
Amen to soccer. You stole my take, even though I called to try to give you a pep talk about the Indians. Man, come on, don't be nervous. You're playing with house money. You shouldn't even be in this series anymore. You know that.
Why?
Well, Girardi, for God's sake. I mean, any dope goes to the the review. I mean, they should have never been around to hit that grand slam.
No, hold on. They screwed it up and survived for a deciding game five anyway. The Indians should have won the whole damn thing by now.
No, that's just crazy. No, how do you figure?
Girardi screwed up and lived to fight another day and then won the next 2 days, and now they're the ones who are the wild card. They're not the division champions. They're not the 102-win team. They're not the one
none of which means anything when you're in the playoffs.
The World Series, so the Indians have all the pressure.
None of which means anything when you're in the playoffs. 0-0. This is why I said you needed to go on a nice little 5-game losing streak and get everybody's yips out of the way, get the slumps out of the way, because the baseball guys are
picky. Well, they're on a 2-game losing streak, so that's
the baseball guys are picky. You win third, because it ain't just 22 in a row. The Indians went crazy. They won 33 out of 35 or something.
Yeah, I think they.
I mean, it's crazy, Bob. I'm pulling for you.
I think they finished September 28-4 or something, 3 or something.
Yeah, it's just insane. I'm pulling for you because I want you to face Houston. Cause I don't want JV to win the World Series and say, oh yeah, but he didn't get to face his nemesis. You know, I want them to beat the best.
You don't want that part, Jimmy. I got to run, brother. Thanks for the call.
Later, brother.
You don't want Justin Verlander to face the Indians because he will have his feelings hurt in a major, major way. All of the recent history tells us that. Jimmy, let's get a wild stat. Cushy Cush.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Hang on a second. I have to punch myself because I just used the words Cushy Cush on the freaking radio. Hold on a second. Good God, what was I thinking? Jim Cushon, Wild Stat of the Day. The Indians tonight have a chance, another one, to close out their series with the Yankees. They have not been very good at that, though. Here's the Wild Stat of the Day when it comes to closing out opponents in playoff series. Starting with the 99 Division Series, the Indians are 3-15 in playoff games with a chance to close out a series. That is not a good stat. That is a wild stat. It is not a good stat. We'll talk more about the ALDS Game 5 coming up with Lodi. Out of Cleveland, coming up when we will come right back on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, rolling onward now at 3:43. I want to take care of something really good for you. You know the winter is coming. It might not feel like it yet, but you got to figure out how to deal with the cold weather. You know what? Here's one great suggestion from Car Stereo One. Avoid the cold weather. You know, the cold weather that comes with scraping the ice and snow off your windows because you got to wait for your car to warm up. You get a remote car starter from Car Stereo One. Get that engine started long before you leave the house. Get the window defroster going and warm on the inside so that when you get in, you're nice and toasty. That's how you deal with cold weather. Steve and his staff at Car Stereo One will set you up with a remote car starter using your own smartphone for just $195 installed. It's amazing, and it's a great price. Now, you can wait and pay a bigger price later in the winter if you want. About $300 is what it'll cost you in the winter. But if you do it now, you can save yourself a ton of money. Get a remote car starter operated by your own smartphone for just $195 installed at Car Stereo One. That's right. Take care of it. It's at Car Stereo One on Central, just a block east of Secor. If you're looking for directions, go to carstereo.com, carstereo1.com, that should be. Turtle. I want to get into a little more baseball now with our good friend Matt Lodi, covering the Indians out of Cleveland in Progressive Field tonight. Game number 5 of the American League Division Series against the Yankees. You can follow Matt's work on neosportsinsiders.com. Matt Lodi, good to have you back, my man. How are you?
Hey, Bob. Good afternoon.
I have a feeling of trepidation. I have a feeling of fear. I have a feeling of, I don't know, it's a pit in my stomach that says you don't give a team like the Yankees the momentum that comes with winning 2 consecutive elimination games. Playing just footloose and fancy-free the way they seem to be. They feel like they have no pressure at all. I feel like all of the pressure is on the Indians now. Even though all of the intangibles favor them because they're in their own home ballpark in front of the home fans, they have the best record in the regular season, blah, 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 blah. Mo is wearing pinstripes. What say you, Matt Lodi?
Well, you know, I've kind of gone back and forth on this probably for the last, you know, since the end of game 4. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of reasons to be nervous. I think I totally agree with you there. But on the other hand, you know, you play all season to get to a point. And I think that when this ball club looks up tonight, you know, if they don't win this thing tonight, I mean, they only have themselves to blame. I mean, it's not like there was a lot of intangibles that got in their way. I mean, they've got their best pitcher on the mound, a guy who's going to win the Cy Young. They're at home. The weather is going to, I think, give them a definite advantage because with the rain, the, you know, colder temperatures, everything like that, the ball's not going to fly out of the park like it would on an 80-degree night. It's just not. And, you know, the Yankees obviously have, you know, taken advantage of an Indians team that just got rattled in New York. It did not play well. And, again, I'm not making excuses. It's on them. They did not play well. That first game, you know, they had a couple opportunities, the Kipnis triple, you know, with one out, couldn't get him home. Jay Bruce 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts. And, of course, everybody talked about Judge robbing Lindor. I don't even know if I look at it as robbing. He just made the play. I mean, you know,
he was out. I mean, you know, it was over the fence. It would have landed right, in the front row if he didn't stick his big glove up there. But it's not like
he didn't have to carry a loft
and climb a wall for
him. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, the guy's been great, obviously, for the Yankees. I know he's a strikeout machine and everybody's watching that, but he's still a pretty good young player. He's getting obviously way more press than he probably deserves, but he's in New York, so what are you going to do?
I don't know about that, Matt. I, you know, 52 home runs as a rookie broke McGuire's record of 49. To all of our knowledge, no steroid allegations. The guy is 6'7" and 280. He's like Adam Dunn. He's just a great big old boy who's got just world-class power. I think he deserves, and he did that without hitting 213 like Adam Dunn used to.
Yeah,
I think he deserves all this press.
Well, he deserves it, but, God, you know, Bob, every day. I mean, every ESPN, every – if the guy was playing in Colorado or in Miami, it would be – look at Gio Stanton in Miami. Got some press, but if he was doing what – if he was doing that in New York, he'd be the lead of SportsCenter every night. I mean, that's
but
my
McGuire
point.
But McGuire did his 49 in Oakland and got the world
press. Well, that's
press.
True.
So, I mean, you
no,
know, that's
you
Oakland.
That.
So, you know, I mean, I get your point. I'm sick of the pro-Yankee stuff, too. But I'm just
right.
just saying about
well,
Aaron, or, I mean, Aaron Judge. He's doing some special things, but he's also striking out like a machine.
Oh, yeah, he is. And then, of course, you go back to game four, and, you know, this team hadn't committed four errors in a game since May of 16. And they just booted the ball around. I mean, people are like, well, why did, you know, Terry go with Bauer? Bauer wasn't the problem. I mean, Bauer wasn't great, don't get me wrong, but he wasn't bad the first inning. And then, you know, when Gio Urshela booted that ball that gave the opportunity to the Yankees, give credit to the Yankees. They jumped on it, they took advantage of it, and they did what they had to do. Judge did get the one big hit. So, you know, hey, listen, this is what you play for. You play to be at home. It kind of reminds me, of course, like last year in Game 7 against the Cubs, even though the Cubs certainly had way more momentum and going into Game 7 than I think the Yankees do because they'd already won a game here. They'd won two games, actually, in Cleveland by the time Game 7 rolled around. You know, if the Indians come out and do what they're supposed to do, in my opinion, Bob, they're going to win the game. But, you know, again, the bigger thing, I think, too, that you have to look at from an Indians perspective is there are two guys that really were a huge impact throughout the 22-game win streak and really throughout the second half of the year are not hitting right now, and that's Jose Ramirez and Frankie Lindor. And if those guys don't hit, that puts a lot more pressure on other guys in that lineup to try to get something going.
Matt, we'll talk about those hitters not doing their jobs in a moment, but let's talk Kluber. You said he's going to win the Cy Young. I hope you're right.
I think it's already been decided, right? I mean, haven't the voters already voted? I mean,
yes. I'm not suggesting the playoffs had anything to do with it. I just mean as we came down to those last 2 weeks in the season, it seemed like it was a coin flip. Every other analysis I would read, you know, one on FoxSports.com, one on ESPN.com, one on CBS, the analyst would say, here's why Sale should win in a close vote over Kluber, or here's why Kluber should win in a close vote over Sale. So it seemed like a coin flip by the end of the regular season. So we'll see. Because there are some numbers in favor of each guy. I hope you're right. Now let's talk about postseason performance. What did you see that was wrong with Corey Kluber in game number 2 that led to that result, and how does that change against the very same lineup here in game number 5?
Well, like he said yesterday at the press conference, everything was wrong. I mean, in that game on Friday night, I'll be honest, the thing, you know, and again, I'm not Mickey Callaway, I'm not a pitching coach, you know, I'm watching these games like everybody else, but the one thing that I noticed is that he just didn't seem to have any movement on his pitches. And you know, Corey is the guy that, you know, he strikes more guys out with balls, you know, coming in the zone, going out of the zone, and everything seemed up to me. The Sanchez home run was a pitch that just stayed up in the zone. The Hicks home run was a pitch that stayed up in the zone. You know, the Castro double that eventually he scored to tie the game at 3 before the Hicks 3-run homer that everybody kind of forgets about, that ball stayed up in the zone. Everything seemed up, and I don't know if that's something that Corey can fix in a matter of a couple of days, if that's something that just, you know, for whatever, you know, again, these guys are so used to doing certain things mechanically and, you know, on a daily basis going out and, you know, pitching a certain way and everything. I don't know, Bob, if Corey's going to look at today and go completely different, or if it's just going to be, okay, business as usual, one bad outing. I did some number crunching on him yesterday and writing the article for today about the four reasons I think you should still have faith in these guys. And the one thing is, this guy hasn't had two bad outings in a long time. He really hasn't. I mean, and when I say bad outings, he had an outing against Houston last year where he lasted two innings. And then the next time out, he went six innings and gave up four runs. Now, I don't think six innings, four runs is a good outing in Kluber terms. In some guys' terms, it's great. But, yeah, you know, what Indians really need, Bob, tonight is seven, maybe six, seven innings, one run, you know, maybe a couple of hits. You know, and the other thing, too, that Corey was obviously doing on Friday is he was just allowing too much traffic. You know, he went from Trevor Bauer, who was so great on Thursday night and didn't let anybody on base, to, you know, Bauer couldn't get anybody, or I should say Kluber couldn't get anybody off the base. It was just, he you know, walks, singles, hard hit. Even the balls that were outs were hard hit. So I think he'll go back and look at what he did wrong. Mickey Callaway is very good about making adjustments, going all the way back to the days of Ovaldo Jimenez with this team. I'm sure that they see and know what he did wrong. Now, the question is, will he change it? The question is, will it matter? Or is this Yankees team going to come in here and hit three, four home runs and send the Indians packing for the offseason?
Well, to me, the other big question, obviously, we're talking to Matt Lodi, who is going to be covering the Indians game in game number five of the ALDS tonight against the Yankees at Progressive Field. He is in Cleveland now. The big thing is he going to have to put up a goose egg for six or seven or eight innings in order to get a chance at winning here, because the Indians' offense suddenly is awful. Francisco Lindor, arguably an MVP candidate, led the league amongst shortstops with home runs, set a record for home runs from a switch hitting shortstop. We know who Frankie Lindor is. He has one hit in the ALCS or DS. We know it was a huge one. It brought the Indians from 8-3 to 8-7 and propelled them to the extra innings win, but one hit. Legitimate MVP candidate Jose Ramirez, 2-17 in the four games, looks lost at the plate. Michael Brantley, who filled in for Edwin Encarnacion primarily, looks like he is not healthy and cannot seem to swing the bat the way he needs to. I do understand Encarnacion is supposed to be back, but what happens? Is that ankle healthy enough to run on or just hit on? Does he need to put one over the wall so that he can walk around the bases? Can he leg one out to second base if he hits a gapper? I don't know. So, you know, there are so many key guys who are just not swinging the bats with any consistency at all. You know, this was the best offense in baseball, or best offense in the American League, that just is not there, Matt Lodi.
Well, you know, the beauty of baseball, though, Bob, is that all you got to do is be good for one game. And you know, again, I know that they were really bad in New York. And you watch those two games like I did, they swung at pitches way out of the zone. They didn't look like the same team. There was no question. And I know Jason Kipnis after the game even used a little profanity in saying, you know, we had a lot of horse blanket bats. And, you know, he even admitted that he felt like the team was a little rattled in New York, which is odd because, you know, again, they've played in New York plenty of times, but it is different in the postseason. There's no doubt about it. And let's give credit to the Yankees. They went up against two pitchers who, you know, Severino has already shut them down once this year in a regular season game, and Tanaka had a very good performance, I felt, and just kind of crossed them up. But, you know, they've already seen CC once. They've seen him plenty of times throughout his career as well. I think they know what he brings to the table. I think their approach will be a little bit different than it was when CC really had him on the ropes on Friday. But again, you know, it looks to me like Jose is pressing. It looks like all of them are pressing, not just Jose. But, you know, obviously Lindor with the one hit, like you mentioned, I don't think you're going to see Brantley tonight. You're right about not being healthy. Just doesn't look it.
No.
Terry Francona kind of alluded to that yesterday. There may be quote-unquote lineup changes, and I think Brantley's going to be one of them. Bob, I just don't see it right now, and I know that that's hard to say because this is a guy who always works so incredibly hard to get back in so he could be a part of this thing, but you're doing it, your team a detriment when you come to the plate, especially with runners on in key situations, and you're not even making contact, you know, and just doesn't look like the guy that made the All-Star team. You know, I know he wanted so badly to be a part of this, but sometimes you just got to look in the mirror and say, I can't do it. You know,
exactly,
so.
Right. Speaking
and
of
the same thing with that,
Matt Lodi, I'm sorry. Let me get to a couple other quick things here in the time we have.
Yeah,
speaking
go ahead.
Of lineup changes, is Urshela in the lineup tonight? If you're Tito Francona,
Urshela is in the lineup tonight because you know what? You've still got. I know that he made the error on what was it? Tuesday
two
night.
Two of them.
Monday night, he made the errors, but you know what? You almost lost the game Friday because of Eric Gonzalez at third base too. You know, I mean, I still feel like you got to go with what got you here, and Gio Urshela was a huge part of the last month and a half. So yes, I believe he's in the lineup.
You know, it just seems like all of these changes. You know, Urshela was put into the lineup because of defense, and he makes two errors. I mean, really, an unbelievable line drive that just went right past his glove. He didn't get leather on it, hit him in the leg, and then an airmailed throw. And I won't even speak about Salazar bouncing his throw and all of that nonsense. But and then you also have, because he's, you got to have the bat in the lineup, and you want Urshela at third. That's what forced Kipnis into center, and what forced him coming up with a weak and a poor transition to try to make that throw to get Frazier, who doesn't exactly have, you know, Greg Allen's wheels, on a sack fly. He made a good throw, but it was too late, too slow coming, because it's out of, you know, it's out of his league. He's not an outfielder by trade. So I just look at all of these different things that were done than what they really had done in the regular season, and I just wonder if these kinds of fancy moves are coming back to bite.
Well, I don't know if they're fancy moves. I mean, some of them were done because of injuries. Some of them were done because, you know, they wanted to keep Gio in the lineup because of his defense. I do agree with you on the Kipnis thing. It's basically an experiment, but at this point, Bob, again, you've gone with it now for the last, what, week of the regular season. You went for it for the first two games of the playoffs, and nobody complained because they won. You know, it's like everything else. Nobody
also
bothers.
Also, because Kipnis made a tremendous diving catch in the gap.
Right, at a point in the game where, you know, that was a scoreless game at that point, and the Indians really needed that. So, you know what? I don't know. I stay with Kipnis. I stay with Gio. I get Brantley out of there, you know, and then I just go from there. I think that's the lineup changes we're going to see. I'd be a little shocked if we see a lot else. I don't think Terry Francona is not the type of manager that's going to say, well, Gio obviously is not playing well, so we're going to get him out of the lineup. I don't think so, because, you know, now at the plate, it's a different story, but defensively, I think he thinks he's fine. I think he thinks it was just two bad plays, and he's going to be just fine.
Real quick, Matt, if Kluber gets in trouble, is Carrasco in the pen?
Yeah, he is in the pen, and you know what? That's probably good, because obviously Carlos has gone so under the radar pretty much for the last second half of the year, but he's pitched so well. Why not have him in the bullpen? I mean, really, you got to have everything ready for tonight, Bob. You know how it goes in the game seven. I mean, you know, Salazar, Clevinger, anybody that's available to pitch, they might need to pitch, because everything got so out of whack after the 13-inning game on Friday night that, you know, it was kind of an all hands on deck. And I thought that's why the Indians would be able to sneak one of these out in New York, because I felt like, you know, the Yankees bullpen as of that point had pitched 17 innings in 2 days, because of the early departure for Gray, and then of course the 13-inning game. I thought that they would have the advantage in New York, and obviously their two starters really stood up and pitched very well. But a lot of this, I'd say almost all of this tonight falls on Corey Kluber and how he throws.
If I may, gentlemen, let me jump in here real quick. All of our mutual friends, Zach Meisel, tweeting out the Indians lineup. Edwin is in the lineup,
read it, read it, top to nine.
All right,
nine.
Lindor, Kipnis, Jose Ramirez.
What positions, too? Is Kip in center again?
Kip is in center, okay. Jose second. Edwin Encarnacion DHing, then Carlos Santana first, Austin Jackson in left, Jay Bruce down to the seven hole in right, Roberto Perez catching, Giovanni Urshela back at third.
All right.
That's per Zach Meisel 10 minutes ago.
I was wondering, I knew it should have been coming out any time now.
Yeah, me as well. Yeah, I was kind of thinking, I was surprised it didn't come out before we got a chance to get on the air, but there you go. Again, nothing there surprising to me. Brantley gone, or not gone, but Brantley out of the lineup. That does not surprise me. You know, them giving Edwin an opportunity to hit, you know, again, your whole season's on the line. Why not? You know, if they get through tonight, Bob, they get a day tomorrow to really just relax a little bit, take the pressure off, and then they've got to get right back to it on Friday. The big thing, too, if they do win tonight, is they don't have to travel, which I think is going to help this team a little bit as they get ready for a very good Houston Astros team.
Could very well be. So, Matt Lodi, your prediction is?
Oh, boy. I'll probably regret it, but I do think the Indians will find a way. I think it's a very close game, though. I don't think it's going to be a 8-0 game. I'm looking 4-3, 3-2, and I think it's going to come down to every pitch in the last two innings. And I think you're going to see Kluber, and then I think you're going to see Miller and Allen. I really do. I think those guys, yeah, again, Terry Francona has always believed, go with Bocacci here, and I think he's going to do that tonight.
Bottom nine, Edwin with the game-winning walk-off blast?
No, I think the Indians will get a bit of a lead. I don't. You know what? If that happens, that place might explode.
I want Edwin on his sore ankle and all to turn on a 102-mile-an-hour heater from Chapman and walk it off. That's what I want to see. Literally,
well, that would be sensational for so many reasons. But again, Bob, I'll just take the Indians scoring four runs in the first and then holding on. How about that? Let's do that.
I'm with you, my man. Matt Lodi, thank you. Enjoy the game out there. We appreciate the time.
Okay, take care, Bob. We'll see you again.
You got it. There's Matt Lodi talking about game number five right here. On ESPN 106.5, the ticket. Hey, what time did you say that coverage starts? 7:30, Kush?
Yeah, indeed. 7:30 for the 8 o'clock first pitch time. We'll have ESPN version right here on the ticket.
All right. Hey, you know, you only have one more shot at the 4K a day, and it's tonight at 6 o'clock. You understand what I'm saying to you? $1,000. We've been doing the 4K a day. That's four chances a day at 9 a.m., noon, 3 p.m., and 6 p.m. Well, all of those are gone. Today's the last day. Only 6 p.m. remains. Listen at 6 p.m. for the keyword. When you hear that keyword, you're going to you're going to text that keyword to 62582, 62582 for a chance at $1,000 four times a day. It's been the 4K a day only from Toledo's sports leader, ESPN 106.5, the ticket. All right, so we got hour number two coming up. Just to let you know what's in store, Jason Candle, head coach of the Rockets, will be joining us at about 4:45 or so to talk about the upcoming MAC matchup against Central and about their win over Eastern. So that'll be coming up then. We're going to talk more about the soccer situation and also a little bit more about the controversy in the NFL. Jerry Jones doubling down, labor unions threatening lawsuits, all kinds of other stuff going on with respect to the national anthem. So we'll include that in our number two, which is coming up directly after the local sports center here on ESPN 106.5.
Would much have preferred us to won and move on. We didn't do that. Now, saying that, we have a really exciting game that's in front of us. And the challenge is, by the time you get to the first pitch, to have everything behind you so you can play your best game. Just like we say when we've won a lot in a row, we don't look back. So that's the same idea now. I mean, we're playing a good team, and we respect that. They've showed that. But our challenge is to play the best game we can, and I think we will. We're going to obviously go through the workout. He's been hitting off the machine already, and we're going to have him go out and run just to see where he is running-wise. You know, he was never exactly our biggest base-stealing threat. We want to use common sense, but I think he's going to be okay. I think I know what solace means. I mean, I'm not exactly positive. I mean, I'm close. I don't know that solace is the right word. I think we tried to be prepared for just about every scenario that could be thrown at us. I think we feel real comfortable with how we went about everything, and we wanted Kluber if we got to this game. I've got about four lineups down there just because there's a lot of either-ors.
A lot of adrenaline, emotions are running high for both sides. I mean, boils down to, you know, the loser goes home. So, I mean, looking at a pretty small sample size, it's four games. I don't know if you can necessarily consider that a trend or that it's been that, I mean, the home team's won every game so far. You know, I mean, I guess that's why you try to get home field advantage, you know, throughout the course of the year, is to hopefully, if it does come down to having a deciding game, that you're able to play it at home.
Just knowing these guys and the way we've responded all year, you know, this is a team that, you know, I feel like every time, you know, whether it's in a game or coming up during the season, we had, you know, a tough time or backs against the walls. I feel like we responded really well. I didn't see why we couldn't go home and play well and end up back here. I've just always been confident in my ability to get people out, no matter what the stuff was. Being able to come out and have a good season, you know, makes me confident. I never really thought about that, you know, pitching in big games or anything like that. I just felt like if I got to the spot, then I could show up.
Momentum a lot of times depends on your starting pitching. You know, CC, I thought, threw a pretty good game here the last time, and CC's used to these big moments, so, I mean, we feel good about him on the mound. But our guys are confident, and we know we're facing a good team, and we know we're facing a tough pitcher. But, I mean, you go through that during the course of the season, a lot of games, and, you know, we've had three must wins, and we've been able to come out on top on all three of them, and hopefully fourth one we can do it too.
Dwayne Wade has to figure it out because he's so used to being the first or second option. He's coming into a team to where he's probably the third, fourth, or even maybe fifth option. So he has to get accustomed with playing with LeBron again, playing with Kevin Love, and he has to pick his spots. They have to find ways to get him involved. Dwayne Wade is a smart player. He'll eventually figure it out. Once he figures out his role, he'll pick his spots.
I would ask every player in the NFL today, if you can hear me, stand up. Stand up. And then once everybody stands, tell the commissioner, now we're standing, can you go stand for us? Because the initial message is gone. So now it's a lose-lose situation. Everybody's losing. The NFL is losing sponsorships because of grandstanding on either side. So it's lose-lose now. So if you're an NFL player, it's really simple. Stand up. Let's take the politics out of our game. Take the politics away from the NFL. Let the fans get back to football. And then once that happens, take our message, take it to the commissioner, and the commissioner, you talk to your buddies. Talk to the 32 owners and take our message to the President of the United States. Because if he wants to grandstand, if he wants to call us out on Twitter every morning at 3 a.m., 6:30 a.m., you're listening. Are you going to listen then? That would be my message. Are you going to listen then when we do what you ask? You want us to stand? Great, we'll stand. Now, can you listen?
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I said it once and I'll say it again, Boog. Start saying something and we'll have something to listen to. But for now, let's just do the first part. Stand up and put an end to all of the histrionics and all of the grandstanding so we can just get our football fix on. That's all we want. We want to watch football free of politics. If I want politics, I'll turn on Fox News or MSNBC. If I want football, I'll turn on ESPN or Fox or NBC on Sunday nights or whatever the case might be. Let's separate the two. We'll talk politics when it's time to talk politics. Just keep it out of the game. By the way, when it is time to watch football, as we begin hour number two, where are you doing it? I hope you're doing it in the perfect man cave. Yeah, and if it's not your own, it should be the one at B-Dubs, Buffalo Wild Wings. They have just gone all kind of man cave crazy. You know, they go above and beyond. They already have the countless taps on tap and HD screens for every game, college and pro, whatever it is you're looking for. And they've created a perfect atmosphere for watching football. That's what it's all about at B-Dubs. Food and drinks included. The classic menu item, 35th Wex Sandwich, is there for you. Also, limited time only, the Blue Moon Barbecue Sauce. Put it on your wings or put it on your burger. Put it in your on your tenders. Just use it. It's outstanding. And you know what? There's a lot more than that, but you got to come in to find out what it is. To the place with the best football experience going, that would be Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Please drink responsibly. Okay. Now, I want to go a little bit off the beaten path here, Kush, because we've talked a lot about the NFL thing and the national anthem. If you don't know, there is a labor union, by the way, in Fort Worth, Texas. Just to kind of hit this real quick, there's a labor union in Fort Worth, Texas, that is filing a formal complaint against Jerry Jones and the Cowboys after Jerry Jones said he will require his players to stand or they will sit the bench. They will not be allowed to play. They filed a complaint that reads, the employer, evidenced by repeated public statements, is attempting to threaten, coerce, and intimidate all Dallas Cowboy players on the roster in order to prevent them from exercising concerted activity protected under the act by saying he will fire any players involved in such concerted activity. Jones, through his efforts to bully his playing workforce, is attempting to unilaterally establish a previously non-existent condition of work. All right? Now, first of all, that complaint is wrong. It's a lie. He's not threatening to fire his players. He said he will bench players, and presumably without pay, so there would be a suspension kind of thing in effect here, but it would not be firing. So they're wrong about that. Secondly, what does concerted activity mean? I'm not a lawyer, so I did the smart thing. Earlier this morning when I read about this story, I contacted a good friend of mine who is one of the most well-respected labor lawyers working in America. This is his specialty. And I said, hey, Pete. Pete's my labor lawyer friend, obviously. I said, what about this? Is this legitimate? Can this union file this lawsuit to make Jerry Jones not bench his players? And this is what the response I got was. He said, first of all, I'm not sure where this union gets standing to file a charge against the NFL, Jones or the Cowboys. The NFLPA is the players' union, not this labor union. It's, what is this? This is blah, 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 blah. A local 100 of the United Labor Unions. They don't represent the players, so how can they file a lawsuit on behalf of players that they don't represent? It's not their union. The NFLPA's is the union. Secondly, writes my friend the attorney, there's a real question as to whether the players' protests constitute a concerted activity, which activity must be in furtherance of mutual aid and protection related to wages, hours, and terms and conditions of employment. In other words, a labor fight. You know, if there's a strike, that sort of thing. Hours, wages, and terms of employment. This isn't a concerted activity because there is not a full-on action or concerted action being taken by the players. It's only what? A couple dozen? Really? A couple dozen across the league of well over 1,000 players? How many players in the NFL, Cushlin? I want to say over 1,500. because 30 players times 50, or excuse me, 30 teams times 50 would be 1,500 on its own.
Yeah.
There's 32 teams and 55 on every active roster. So over 1,500 players, and you're only dealing with a couple dozen who are doing the protesting, so it's not a concerted activity. So that part of it, I think, is gone. And third, and perhaps foremost, according to my attorney friend, the NFL has a work rule related to conduct during the playing of the national anthem. Enforcing such rule, especially if it had been bargained with the union, is lawful. And the work rule he is talking about is the NFL operations manual, which says the players should stand at attention with their helmets under their left arms and the right arms at their side or hand over their chest for the playing of the national anthem and the presentation of our colors. So, quite simply, it's in the rule book. Now, the key there, not the rule book, the operations manual, the key there is the word should. Okay, there's the word should. We covered a little bit of this yesterday, so I'll just go right through it. If it says should, does that mean must? And if it doesn't mean must, is that what Roger Goodell was threatening to do when he wrote his letter to the players yesterday saying, we want you all to stand? Now, he doesn't give a rat's behind about any of the causes or any of the protests or black or white or anything else. It's all about the green. It's all about business. The 32 owners employ Roger Goodell to keep business good, and if this is going to hurt the bottom line in business, that's when he's going to step up and say, we want you all to stand. And if that means changing the operations manual word from should to must, well, that's also going to mean instituting some sort of punishment, some sort of punitive action in the event that somebody chooses not to do that. And that is where you could get into an issue with the NFL Players Association. So just wanted to hit that real quick off the top of this hour. Now, there was something that happened last night that I think is very, very, very cool. It was in Las Vegas, and we know that there's a new NHL team in Las Vegas, right, Mr. Cushlin?
Indeed.
What do they call them?
I believe they're the Golden Knights, right?
Golden Knights.
Okay.
Which I think used to be a casino there, wasn't it, Golden Knights?
It would not surprise me if that was the name of a casino. I don't know.
And, of course, they're using a play on words because people go there at night to gamble and turn their, you know, their gambling into gold. Golden Knights, N-I-G-H-T-S, but, of course, they are the K-N-I-G-H-T-S, but that's a play on words, too. So it is the Las Vegas Golden Knights, and at the game last night, they did something wonderful. They held a 58-second moment of silence. That's a lot of moments. You might not think 58 seconds is a long time. After all, I mean, it's 1 minute. It's 2 seconds shy of a minute. But putting 20,000 people in an arena and having everything be dead still to the point where you could hear a pin drop, every one of those seconds probably seems like an eternity. Because your mind is just, you know, it's filling with images. Why are we doing this again? Because a whole bunch of people were murdered. Why are we silent right now? Because over 500 people were injured. It looked like a war zone out there. It was the worst mass shooting in American history. And as those, oh my God, only 12 seconds have gone by since I started saying that. They stood there for 58 seconds. They replaced all of the digital banner ads around the arena in Las Vegas last night that would feature companies' messages. And just put pro Las Vegas messages up, Vegas strong, Vegas resilient, et cetera, as well as American flags. Shockingly, how about that, to tie those two stories together. So anyway, it was a great moment of unity and a great moment of memorializing the victims and thinking about the terrible tragedy and supporting the families of those who survived and those who were lost and all of those kinds of things, right? It makes perfect sense. That's what they did. So they were talking about that this morning on Mike and Mike. And Booger McFarland was in for Mike Golick, so it was Greenberg and Booger. And they were talking about this situation in Las Vegas last night. And the conversation veered toward a familiar, you know, into a familiar territory, which is, why do we have to wait for tragedies for this kind of thing to happen? And I just felt, as I listened to it, like, I can't believe what I'm hearing. And I felt like I needed to respond to this this afternoon. So it's a minute 28 seconds long. This is Mike Greenberg this morning and Booger McFarland doing Off the Top. Hopefully you listen to Mike and Mike every day right here on The Ticket. And this is the guys doing Off the Top about what happened in Vegas last night. Listen closely because I'll be responding to it in a moment.
Tonight in Las Vegas last night as the new NHL team in town, the Golden Knights, played their first home game. It isn't the first game in the history of their franchise. They've actually won all of their games. But last night was their first home game, and Steve Levy was there. They did a terrific job, I thought, with the coverage last night on ESPN. Some of the little features of it that you may have seen, there were no advertisements on the boards anywhere. It just said Vegas Strong everywhere you looked, and they brought first responders and others out onto the ice as part of a ceremony. It was a really special night. And to the point you were making a little bit earlier, a good illustration of the ability of sports under the right circumstances to galvanize people and bring people together.
You know, Greeny, you see something like this, and it just breaks your heart what happens. But then you see the people come together. And then for me, my thoughts and prayers go out to all the families that were affected. But then I get a little pissed off, Greeny, and here's why. Because at a time like this, we all come together. Like, we don't see color, we don't see anything. We just come together for each other. But it always happens at times where there's tragic situations. How come we can't do it when things are normal? How come we can't do it just like, okay, things are great, let's come together and make our country a better place?
That's the part of this that I just kind of felt the need to respond to. What does that even mean? You know, what is Booger McFarland actually saying there? What does that mean? Why does it have to be something tragic that happens that brings us all together? Why can't we all come together when times are good? Should we hold moments of silence when things are normal? What are we talking about here? When things are normal and everybody's just doing their thing and we're at a sporting event, we salute the flag, we do the national anthem, and we cheer our teams. I mean, we're supposed to, what does that mean? We're supposed to come together when there isn't a tragedy. Why does it have to be a tragedy? And the answer to that, Booger, is because there was a tragedy. Is this difficult? Why don't we eulogize people when they're still alive? Why do we wait until something tragic happens like they die? Why don't I come on the radio every day or once in a while, and just sing the praises of Jim Cushlin? Well, Jim Cushlin is a wonderful young man. He's a husband and a father, and he started out his life in Cleveland, Ohio, and he was born a lifelong Cleveland Brown. Not born, but he has been a lifelong Cleveland Browns and Indians and Cavaliers fan, and now he works and lives in Toledo. I'm not going to tell his life story every day because nothing tragic happened to him. If he dies tonight, tomorrow I'm going to tell you his life story, and I'm going to eulogize him. Sorry, Jim, I don't mean to be graphic.
No, I know. You need the example. I get it.
You see, the point is we eulogize people after something tragic happens. We hug one another and come together arm in arm when tragedy happens because that's when people need to be consoled. I get really, really tired of the sanctimony of guys saying, you know, why do I got to wait for something bad to happen? Why does it have to be a Columbine? Why does it have to be a Las Vegas shooting? Why does it have to be a hurricane that hit down there to bring everybody together? Because that's when people need to be brought together. Because tragedy creates victims. And what do good people, decent people of goodwill do? We come to the aid of victims. We comfort victims. And we comfort one another in the names of those victims. It's just so sanctimonious, and it's so self-serving, and so pointless to ask, well, how come we don't do this kind of thing when everything is good? Why has it got to be something terrible that brings us together? Well, because that's when we need to be brought together.
And I get a little pissed off, Greeny, and here's why. Because at a time like this, we all come together. Like, we don't see...
Hold on a second. I feel like there's another audio element running underneath that. Kush, I don't know if you heard it or not, but I don't want it to be heard. I just want to hear from Booger McFarland on this piece. Let me try that again. I feel like there's something else going on. Jim, tell me if you hear this and if this is clear.
The reckless regime.
All right. Now, there is something playing. I just don't know where it's coming from, and that's frustrating, and it's unfortunate. To the point that I was making, though, it is kind of irrelevant. The rest of it is kind of irrelevant. Because what Booger said there at the beginning of that, he kind of reiterates it at the end, and then unfortunately, at the tail end of that, that's when Mike Greenberg says, "Yeah," Greeny says, "Yeah, I agree." Essentially, you know, if I knew the answer to that, Greeny said, then I'd be a rich man because boy, there's that's something that should happen. Let me try this one more time, Jim, and see if the other audio piece that's interfering with us is going. One last shot at it. Here we go. And maybe not.
And I get a little pissed off, Greeny, and here's why. Because at a time like this, we all come together. Like, we don't see color, we don't see anything. We just come together for each other. But it always happens at times where there's tragic situations. How come we can't do it when things are normal? How come we can't do it just like, okay, things are great, let's come together and make our country a better place? That's what bothers me about a situation like this.
Yes, I think many people share your feelings, and the answer to your question is I have no idea. Why does this happen this way? Obviously, If I had the answer to that question, I'd be doing something much more important for a living than this.
Then you should be doing something much more important for a living than this, because I just gave the answer. We do these coming together moments when people are in tragedy, when people are sad, when people have been devastated, when they've been victimized. That's why we do this. That's why we come together when we come together. For God's sake, this isn't rocket science, boys.
But I share your feeling that it is disheartening.
It is disheartening that we only eulogize the dead and not the living. It is disheartening when we only come together and say prayers for people victimized by hurricanes and not from people who have experienced sunny skies for the last 6 months. It is disheartening when we don't eulogize people who went to work that day and came home and had nothing bad happen, that they didn't have their place of business shut up. What are you saying? It's a terrible thing that we don't get together before every Detroit Lions game at Ford Field and sing up with people, because things are good now, and let's celebrate the fact that there hasn't been anything tragic that's happened in a week. For goodness sakes, you start to dilute the message. What was done last night in Las Vegas, which has been done, of course, in, you know, the one thing that Greeny is right about is he made his initial explanation of what happened last night in Vegas at the Golden Knights game. The one thing he's right about is sports is a galvanizing force. It really can bring people together. At times of great crisis. Just a week or two ago, I replayed for you the Whitney Houston national anthem at the 1991 Super Bowl, which, of course, was just played just a couple of weeks after we went to war in the Persian Gulf, and American citizens went and put their life on the line to protect the United States and her allies. And Whitney Houston and the Super Bowl brought people together behind that war effort and behind our young men and women who are going to put their lives on the line. Yes, sports can be a galvanizing force in times of great crisis or in times of national strife. And so that's when it's used. That's exactly the answer to the question. Nobody's going to be doing up with people and singing wonderful praises about how great things are when things are great. They're just going to go on about their business. There's a time and a place for everything, and those would not be the times or places. All right, you know when the time and the place for the annual Michigan-Ohio State game is? I do, and you could be there, and you could be there as our guest. The time is November 25th. The place is at the Big House, and ESPN 106.5 The Ticket in Yingling have a chance for you to attend the Michigan-Ohio State game in Ann Arbor with limo service from our friends at Total Image Limousine. The runner-up prize, if you don't win the grand prize, will be a trip or two to Indianapolis. And we've got tickets for you to the Big Ten Championship game December 2nd at Lucas Oil Stadium there. To qualify, all you got to do is register online at 1065theticket.com one time or text Border Battle, one word, Border Battle, to 64636. And if you qualify, we'll ask you to attend our giveaway party on Thursday night, November 16th at the Blarney downtown to find out if you've won either the grand or the runner-up prize. All brought to you by Yingling, True House of Munch, Get Go Transportation, Churchill's Country Hearth, Churchill's Country Hearth, sorry, those aren't together, TAS Electronics, Distracted Haunted House, and your football freaks right here at the Ticket. So good luck to you on that. Okay, by the way, speaking of football and freakiness, don't forget we got Jason Candle coming up here in about, 9 minutes or so is what I'll call it. We'll call it 8 minutes, I guess. Jason Candle, head coach of the Rockets, who are now 4-1 after opening up MAC play with a 22-13 win over the, or was it 15?
20-15, it was 15.
Yeah, 15. Over Eastern Michigan, they get another directional. They get Central this time around, coming up at Central on Saturday. So we're going to hear from Coach Candle about the win and about the next game coming up. But while we're doing all of that, I want to just make one more run. I want to make one more run at our friends in the soccer community, because I feel the need to do this again. Team USA, the U.S. men's national team, according to those who study and follow soccer, set soccer in America back by 20 years by losing to somebody named Trinidad and his teammate Tobago last night. Was this Winter Olympics? Were they tobogganing? I don't know. But whatever it was, it supposedly set U.S. soccer back by 20 years, according to somebody who watches soccer and talks about it on ESPN. I think you should hear him.
Ladies and gentlemen, the United States have not qualified for the World Cup. They are out. It's not about tonight. It's not about Jurgen Klinsmann. It's not just about Bruce Arena. As a whole, U.S. soccer is not prepared. They have not done a good enough job of getting this group ready to play. By the way, as an ex-player,
Every single one of those players,
they can take some
nightmares
yep.
for the rest of their lives, because this is an utter embarrassment with the amount of money that is in Major League Soccer and in this sport. You can't get a draw, a tie against Trinidad? We can't beat Trinidad on a field that's too wet and too heavy? What are we doing? What are we doing? This is the discussion that's being had. It's remarkable to me.
I will tell you this. The soccer guy's analysis of this, the soccer guy's rant, is far more entertaining than any soccer game has ever been.
And it's when I go true. On this stupid thing right here at how ignorant people are when the rest of the world, Belgium played Bosnia on a cow pasture. Yes. Iceland is the same size as Corpus Christi, Texas, or Anaheim, California. They can figure it out. If this failure does not wake up everyone from U.S. soccer to Major League Soccer, from pay to play to broadcasters to everything, then we're all insane. If we don't change it, and I mean we, everyone in U.S. soccer, then what are we doing? What's the point? Because that should have never happened, and it did, and every single person should look themselves in the mirror. And by the way, that's including myself. Yeah, I'm part of U.S. soccer.
We're all involved.
I played for the program. It's embarrassing.
I don't know who that guy is. Somebody named Tyler Tululu or something like that.
Taylor Twillman.
Yeah, that's him. He was far more entertaining than any soccer game I'm sure he's ever played in has ever been. And certainly, and by the way, his point about Iceland being as big as Corpus Christi or Anaheim, California, yeah. And you know what? That's why they're great at soccer. Because in Iceland, they don't have the NFL, and they don't have Major League Baseball, and they don't have the NBA, and they don't have other things that are a hell of a lot more fun and entertaining than soccer.
I'll give you this, Bob. That whole rant was entertaining, and it's pretty much all true about the state of soccer in this country right
yes,
now.
Yes, it is. And you know what? My friends, good luck on you if you play. And to moms and dads of soccer kids, good luck to you too, but understand that's the future. If you think there's any future, no, it's garbage at the top. Get your kid off of the pitch and put him on the gridiron where he belongs. I tweeted this about half an hour ago, and I stand by it. If the good Lord wanted you to play soccer, he would have given you 3 feet and no hands. He did not. Ergo, if you're playing soccer, you're making God mad. Hey, I want to send you to the Haunted Hydro in Fremont as we get ready for Jason Candle. That's right. A pair of passes to the Haunted Hydro in Fremont to the sixth caller. To 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. We'll get you hooked up there. Then we'll talk to Coach Jason Candle, UT Rockets, about the upcoming matchup with Central Michigan as we continue right here on the
team. Welcome back into this Wednesday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Kushler now hanging out with you. Time to turn our attention to college football. Toledo Rockets getting a win back on Saturday, but it was a closer score, as one might expect with a rebounding Eastern Michigan squad. But the Rockets do get the win 20-15 to improve to 4-1 to get their first MAC win in their first try of the season. Help us break it down and look ahead to what's up next for the Rockets. We once again welcome in the head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, joining us. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Doing great, Jim. How are you?
Hey, not too bad. Not too bad. Let's start with this one, 20-15. We talked about this last week, Eastern Michigan, not your older brother's Eastern Michigan. This is an improving program, and they showed it, I thought, in this one, coming back a couple of times to make this one a nail-biter.
Yeah, they're a much-improved team. You know, they force you to play 60 minutes of football, and they force you to beat them. You know, they're very sound in what they do, and you know they don't beat themselves. But what they force you to do is they force you to beat them, and that's what we were able to do. So proud of our kids for their effort of finishing the game. And there were times in that football game we were playing at a really high level in all three phases, and there were other times that we're just okay on the offensive side of the ball, I thought. And you know, certainly, you know, had a couple special teams plays that were uncharacteristic of us, but I thought defensively we were very good all day.
Yeah, let's talk about that defense, forcing a couple of turnovers, a couple of interceptions. Obviously, that always helps when you win the turnover battle, but they were also able to get some pressure and to hold Eastern Michigan, especially late when they were trying to come back and make a game of this. It was 17-15, early stages of the fourth. Talk to me about the defense in the fourth quarter to keep Eastern off the scoreboard again.
Well, we were really, you know, really good in situational defense all day. You know, we held them to 1 of 11 on third down conversions, and anytime you do that, you got a real chance to win the game, I believe, and especially when you can couple it with a couple turnovers. You know, we've been, you know, we've battled the injury bug here, uh, as bad as I've ever been a part of, you know, my time here at Toledo. And, you know, we didn't have Jordan Williams all week of practice last week, you know, so we didn't start Jordan. He played in the game, but we didn't start him because of the injury. And Khalil steps in and intercepts two passes in his, you know, in a replacement, you know, role. So, you know, I say that, you know, that we're are dinged up and we're banged up, not to make excuses for our football team, but to just, you know, cement the point of how proud I am of our team and of the young players that step up when their opportunities have presented themselves. And, you know, I think that speaks a lot to the character of our team and our the ability of some of our guys that are in backup roles, and really proud of some of those efforts.
Yeah, and I don't consider making any kind of excuses, Coach. I mean, injuries do happen. That's what football is. So I'll turn it around to one of those cliche kind of comments. It's a next man up thing, and your guys are showing it.
It certainly is. You know, at times Saturday without five starters on offense, you know, throughout the game, you know, starting center out, both guards, Terry Swanson out, and then we lose Cody Thompson on the first series of the game. So, you know, I thought some of the guys, even on offense, you know, even though we didn't maybe put up as many points as we have in the past, or, you know, maybe at times didn't play as well, you know, in situational football on offense as we have here in previous games, but, you know, I thought they did really well. You know, and it's encouraging moving forward because, you know, you hope to get some of those guys back in some of those key spots, and, you know, once you do, it'll only, you know, only make you appreciate your depth even more as you move forward through this conference run.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Coach. We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets, who are now 4-1 on the season after defeating Eastern Michigan back on Saturday at the Glass Bowl, 20-15. Let's talk about some of that running game. You mentioned a couple of guys on the line hurt. You mentioned the backs going down early. Tompkins and Seymour getting into the end zone, each with over 15 carries. Talk to me about not only their efforts on the day, but the line, because you got to have holes to run through.
Yeah, and we've been we're trying to piece together spots on the offensive line that were, you know, guys, you know, whatever our best five combination is to give us a chance to win. You know, but those young backs have stepped up and have done a great job. You know, you anytime you lose a guy like Terry Swanson, and you know he wasn't able to go at all on Saturday, and that opened a door for Art to start the game, and, you know, and then Shaquif to get in there. And those guys are both guys that have ran for 100 yards in a game here before in their career. So I don't expect much drop-off. You know, you don't look for injuries to happen and things like that, but you certainly have to plan for them. You know, and at running back and on the offensive line thus far, our depth has really been challenged and tested, and so far so good.
Talk to me, Coach, about Logan Woodside's effort on the day, 23 of 34, 289, no touchdowns, but no turnovers for you guys in general, but talk to me about his outing.
Yeah, very efficient, just what he is. You know, we didn't maybe get some of the, you know, the highlight plays down the field. You know, we just were a hair off, and I thought the weather conditions here had a lot to do with that. It was a great day, obviously, but a strong wind that affected the kicking game a little bit, and certainly both teams' ability to throw the football. You know, both teams were combined 5 of 26, I believe, on third down, you know, throughout the game, and some of that had to do with two really good defenses, but, you know, some of it had to do with the ball, you know, wasn't, it was moving a little more than it usually would. And, you know, I thought Logan was really good. He has been all year long. He's playing like a senior quarterback and doing what he needs to do and leading our team.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza. Jim Kushlin here with you. Let's zoom out and talk about something we bring up a lot when talking to you, and quite frankly when I talk to your counterpart, Mike Jinkston in Bowling Green, the parity of this league. This is a strong league. I personally consider, especially with the Mountain West down, to be the second best of the group of five conferences, but the parity to me was on display, you know, in this one, because the injuries, closer score between you guys at Eastern Michigan. Bowling Green gets their first win over Miami. You have a Central, who we'll get to in a second, is there your opponent this week. They go on the road in Athens and beat the East favorite Ohio, and then you have that crazy 7 overtime game between Western and Buffalo. Once again, a week demonstrating how evenly matched this conference can be on any given Saturday.
Well, I think you said it best. I mean, there is parity all across the board. You know, and you get to the point in time now where you're in the middle of the season and you got everybody has some bumps and bruises, and, you know, your lineup isn't quite exactly what it looked like the first day of preseason camp. You know, so it's about really getting your team ready to play in a short week in most cases. You know, we're going to to get into midweek games here coming up soon, and you know, some games on Thursdays, and you know, that'll turn to Wednesdays and Tuesdays and things like that that our league you know, does to for the exposure that we get from national television. But yeah, I think it's survival of the fittest from here on out. I mean, you gotta, and it's not just our league; it's all over college football. I mean, you know, if you don't show up every weekend, you get beat. I mean, ask Oklahoma. I mean, that's just how it goes. You have to prepare really well. You have to respect your routine and your process of what that looks like to get ready to go each and every Saturday or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whenever they ask you to play. And for those 60 minutes, you have to be at your best, because the day that you're not, somebody else will be, and you'll have a, you won't be singing your fight song in a locker room, and that's certainly not the goal.
Well said, Coach. And one of those games where rears its ugly head, I think, this week on the road for you guys, this Saturday, 3:30, the kickoff. Mount Pleasant, always a tough place to go to play a Central Michigan team who, as I mentioned, they're 3-3. But they just went on the road to Athens, the East Division favorite Ohio, and beat them last week. What can you tell me about Central Michigan?
Well, they're a team that's, you know, probably they dealt with their cycle of injuries at the beginning of the season. And, you know, they got their, you know, probably the best tight end in the conference. They got him back last week, and he was a really big boost to their pass offense, catching 10 balls for 140 or 50 yards. And, you know, playing a senior quarterback who's transferred from Michigan, and, you know, when you got a veteran quarterback and you got a big target like that, and you know, they get their best, you know, their receiver that probably has the most speed on the team. They got him back a little bit last week, and he'll probably be playing full time with them this week. So they're hitting stride offensively. It'll be a tough unit for us to slow down. We've got to be locked into what the game plan calls for us to do, and certainly play like we did on Saturday when we're running to the football and trying to create turnovers and playing really fast, which I think we'll do. You know, and then on the offensive side of the ball, they, you know, against Central's defense is leading the country in takeaways. I think they have 17 takeaways on the season, which is really outstanding. You know, they benefited in that game against Ohio Saturday, like you mentioned. They turned them over four times and then blocked the field goal for a touchdown. So when you can gain extra possessions and you know, aid your offense and help through special team scores and defensive scores and things like that, you're only helping your cause to win the game at the end of the day. So, you know, they're a complete team. They require our complete attention and our attention to detail and to go play really well to give us ourselves a chance to win the game.
Toledo Rockets head coach Jason Candela joining us. The Rockets on the road in Mount Pleasant, Central Michigan, this Saturday, 3:30, the mid-afternoon kickoff. Coach, always appreciate the time. Always appreciate the insight. Best of luck to you guys out there on Saturday. And hopefully we're talking about another Rockets win when we reconvene next week.
Thanks, Jim. Go Rockets.
That is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, joining us here on the Extravaganza. And, yeah, Central's going to be a tough one. It's always been tricky for whatever reason going up to Mount Pleasant up there in Michigan, taking on these Chippewas who, as Coach mentioned, you know, they have the most takeaways in not just the conference, but in the nation right now at 17 on the takeaway side. Now, that's not necessarily the plus minus on the turnover thing, you know, factoring in the giveaways, but they forced turnovers. And as you mentioned, they also got another extra points on blocking a field goal and returning it for a touchdown. So this is a team that can make things happen on special teams, and they could do things defensively to take the football away from you. So careful ball control is going to be an issue, I think, this Saturday, especially if they're still down a couple of linemen and down a couple of running backs. And I know that some of those injuries are, you know, are what they are. And you're going to have to be healed, but not everybody is necessarily going to be healed and ready for this one on Saturday. But the Rockets still have it all out in front of them. 4-1, 1-0 now in MAC play on the season. They only lost, of course, a couple of weeks back on the road at Miami. But this will be a tough one for Central. And that coach has mentioned it. We're getting closer and closer to all the weekday MACtion games after this Saturday. Next Saturday, the 21st, back at the Glass Bowl against Akron. Then it's Thursday, Wednesday, Friday for the remaining five games. For the Toledo Rockets, some of them on various national television outlets, ESPN, CBS Sports Network, what have you. We know what's going to happen with that. We'll get to those weeks when we get there, but obviously a tough one for the Rockets at Central Michigan. Don't let the 3-3 record fool you. This is a solid football team, maybe not on the level of Northern Illinois a couple years ago or even Western Michigan last year, but again, Always be noted, it always seems to be tricky whenever the Rockets head up to Mount Pleasant. And that's going to do it for this Wednesday edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today. Stick around, though. Coming up after the quick timeout, we're going to switch gears to Drive Time. Mike Miller in the captain's chair for this one for the next hour. So that's always a whole bunch of fun. Adam Krug, the Adrian hockey head coach, will be stopping by. And then the weekly outdoor update with Matt Markey of the Blade. Then a little bit later, of course, 7:30 the coverage time. Game 5 of the division series. Indians, Yankees from Cleveland. Somebody's going home and somebody's going to go take on the Astros. And we'll find that out about at 11 o'clock, 11:30 or so later on tonight. So we'll talk about that and a lot of other football things tomorrow. A lot of college football on tomorrow's program. Jim Branson, our voice of the Wolverines. Paul Keel's voice of the Buckeyes will be joining us. So a lot of college football recapping Game 5 of the Division Series. It'll be a ton of fun. But stick around. Drive Time. Mike Miller coming at you next. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.